Okay, we're going to pick up with chapter 7, verse 29, a section called religion. And he's getting into a point with a section of the next couple of chapters where he's trying to give real practical advice to the people that he's talking to. He's not speaking in generalities, and he says things that are not always consistent with what you might call traditional Catholic teaching, because he's really looking at it from a very practical perspective. And so that's kind of where he's coming from here. For those who just joined us, we're in chapter 7, verse 29, section on religion. It says, "With all your soul, fear the Lord and honor his priests," which is good news. "With all your might, love your maker, and do not forsake his ministers." So he's once again repeating his prior guidance on loving the Lord and following the commandments of God. "Fear the Lord and honor the priest, and give him his portion as it is commanded you." And so you wonder, where is it commanded you? And it's commanded in... they have a note here where it shows all the different places that you can find those commandments in the Old Testament. Exodus 29, verses 26 through 28, Leviticus chapter 7, 32 and 34, Numbers 18, 11 through 32, and Deuteronomy 18, 3 through 4. So those are the places that the Jewish people in that time would have known about. So when he says, you know, give him his portion, you know, honor the priests and give him what they're due as it's commanded you. And so those are all the places where that was commanded. The first fruits, the guilt offering, the gift of the shoulders, the sacrifice of sanctification, the first fruits of the holy things. This idea of first fruits has been part of Scripture for God only knows how long. Back when God created Adam and Eve, and Cain and Abel were fighting, when Cain killed Abel, it's because they were giving their first fruits of their crops, which God had commanded, and God didn't like Cain's, but he liked Abel's, and got Cain all upset, and so Cain killed Abel. But it was back, that whole idea of first fruits has been around since then. So it wasn't something just new with these people in Israel here. And then it gets into once again almsgiving. So stretch forth your hand to the poor so that your blessing may be complete. So he's reiterating the idea that when you give to the poor from your wealth, that you're also gaining a blessing for yourself. It says, give graciously to all the living and withhold not kindness from the dead. And that's another very interesting point here. Withhold not kindness from the dead. What do you think they're talking about there?
Praying for the dead?
Yeah, it's another reference for the existence of purgatory, the concept of purgatory. Withhold not your kindness from the dead. It kind of goes along with what we see in Maccabees, where it says it is a good and generous thing to pray for the dead. And so we see that idea. And also respect your elders too. You know, just because they're dead doesn't mean you should, you know, talk badly about them. So you want to be kind toward those who have predeceased us, even after they're gone. You know, think nicely of them. And so we do a lot of that in our church, of course. You know, we offer masses for our deceased relatives and friends and that kind of thing. So do not feel those who weep, but mourn with those who mourn. And Jesus reiterated something like that in the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Yeah. Because for such deeds you will be loved. Not just loved by other people, but loved by God too. In all you do, remember the end of your life, and then you will never sin. And that tracks with what Jesus said when he said, store up treasure in heaven. Don't worry about storing up treasure on earth. So a lot of these things he's talking about here are things we see hints of in the New Testament. And then it gets into a section beginning chapter 8 on social life, and he's talking about prudence here. He says, do not contend with a powerful man, lest you fall into his hands. Now, when we get into 8, there's an interesting note here in the Navarre Bible. It says, it is somewhat surprising to see the number of sayings in these chapters. So chapter 8 and chapter 9, he's talking about here. The number of sayings in these chapters that begin with do not. The whole passage is an impressive call for prudence in one's dealing with all kinds of people and situations, in social life with women and with friends. The modern reader is taken aback by the often negative picture drawn of women in this book. To understand it properly, one needs to remember that the writer is a sage who, in a patriarchal society, is offering his young disciples advice on the life that is opening up ahead of them. All the sayings in this part of the book are so clear and direct that they hardly call for commentary. They smack very much of popular wisdom, of things learned from experience. This is probably the background that Christ had in mind when he told his own disciples that, without losing their simplicity, they should avoid being naive. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be wise as serpents, but innocent as doves, in Matthew 10. And then Clement of Alexandria comments, it is not enough for the prudent to keep themselves pure. They must make sure that they are beyond all reproach and above any rumor of suspicion. So we see those kinds of things. So we'll see that kind of stuff in chapter 8 and chapter 9 here. So he begins with chapter 8. He says, do not contend with a powerful man, lest you fall into his hands. Do not quarrel with a rich man, lest his resources outweigh yours. For gold has ruined many and has perverted the minds of kings. Do not argue with a chatterer, nor heap wood on his fire. In other words, don't keep him going. Don't keep him going here. I like that one. Do not argue with a chatterer. don't heap wood on his fire. I like that. Do not jest with an ill-bred person, lest your ancestors be disgraced. I thought that was a very interesting statement too, because if you took Latin in high school, you remember Cicero, and Cicero was one of the senators, and so he was always arguing before the Senate on behalf of one person or the other. Excuse me. Pollen's making my nose run. It's driving me crazy all day yesterday. So when Cicero would get up and talk about somebody, and it was kind of fun when we had to translate this kind of stuff, because you kind of wanted, you'd hate to be the relatives of anybody he was against, because he would talk about what a terrible person the guy's mother was, and all the relatives. I mean, he would just go down the whole list of relatives, just tearing them down like crazy. So you didn't want to get on his bad side if he was going to give a talk before the Roman Senate. He was pretty wild in his condemnations. But interesting guy. He was a good writer. It says, do not reproach a man who is turning away from sin. So you want to encourage him. He might still be committing sin of some kind. He's turning away. He hasn't completed the turn yet. And so he's turning away from sin, but you want to encourage him. So don't reproach a man who is in that process of turning his life around. And Eleanor just joined us. Morning, Eleanor. It says, do not disdain a man. It says, remember that we all deserve punishment. So if we think we have the right to reproach somebody who's trying to make his life better and turn away from sin, just remember, none of us are perfect. And we're going to have to, you know, answer for our lives as well. But we answer to God. And so not other people, typically. So just keep that in mind. He says, do not disdain a man when he is old, for some of us are growing old. Do not rejoice over anyone's death. Remember that we all must die. So we shouldn't be happy that somebody, you know, is suffering that death and everything. When Mike was staying with us during his hospice, I remember talking to him one day, and we were out on the patio, and he said, you know, I'm not afraid to die. And he had an interesting kind of perspective. He said, you know, when a baby's in the mother's womb, it feels very, very comfortable. It doesn't want to leave. You know, it's very happy. It's being fed. It's being taken care of. Mother's singing to it, talking to it. You know, it's just sitting there really, really happy. And then it doesn't want to leave that environment. But one day, all of a sudden, something's squeezing him and pushing him out. And he's very unhappy with that. But then when he finally gets born, he's born into a whole new set of experiences and grows as a person. And he said it's like we have two experiences of being in the womb. One, the first time when we were in our mother's womb, and now while we're living in the world, it's like being in the womb again. And we might like our life, we might think it's very happy and all this kind of stuff like this. But we don't want to leave it. You know, nobody wants to die. But he said, you got to think about it like being born again, because when you do die, you're born into eternity. And all of a sudden, you're standing before the person who loves you infinitely, and you want him to say, welcome into my home, you know, and that's for eternity. That never ends. And so you want it to be that kind of experience. And so our obligation is to live our lives making sure that that's the experience we have. You know? And I thought that was a kind of interesting perspective, because he wasn't afraid at all. And it gave me an interesting perspective on, you know, how we should prepare for our own end on this earth. Because it's not an end. It's not really dying. It's just moving on to a new way of existing that never changes. So it says, do not slight the discourse of the sages, but busy yourself with their maxims, because from them you will gain instruction and learn how to serve great men. Do not disregard the discourse of the aged, for they themselves learned from their fathers. So pay attention to what I tell you guys. I'm 82 years old. I'm aging. Because from them you will gain understanding and learn how to give an answer in time of need. It says, do not kindle the coals of a sinner, lest you be burned in his flaming fire. What's a really big example of that we see going on right now? Do not kindle the coals of a sinner, lest you be burned in his flaming fire.
The rainbow crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we see things like that all around us, you know. But right now, especially because of the leak of that Supreme Court decision, we have all these people that are so angry that they can no longer keep killing their babies. And they're planning this summer of rage and all this kind of stuff. So he said, don't encourage those people. Don't kindle that by encouraging them to continue. You want to pray for their conversion, not support them. And so every day I ask the Blessed Mother to send her angels to disrupt all their activities if possible. And also try to, you know, encourage them to convert. Give them the great grace of conversion if possible. Because they're so angry. And Jesus told us in the gospel last week, in one of the daily masses, that he's talking about talking from the Sermon on the Mount, and he was talking about that, and he said, you know, in the law it says you cannot kill, but he says, I tell you, do not be angry. For if you are angry with your brother, you will be judged. You know, you'll be judged on that. But there's such an inflamed anger going on right now because they want to keep killing their babies. It's just really really disheartening to see humans acting that way. The future of our race, you know, they want to kill. It says, do not get up and leave an insolent fellow, lest he lie in ambush against your words. So you don't just get up and leave and insult him by leaving. You just don't pay attention to what he's saying and don't follow what he says. If he's an insolent person, don't act that way. Don't imitate that. Do not lend to a man who is stronger than you. But if you do lend anything, be as one who has lost it. And Jesus told us the same thing. When somebody wants to borrow from you, give them what they need when they borrow and assume you're not going to get repaid. He doesn't apply that only to those who are stronger than you or richer or anything else. It's just anybody. You know, be kind to other people. When they need help, give it to them. Do not give surety beyond your means, but if you give surety, be concerned as one who must pay. If you co-sign a note, don't do that beyond your ability to pay that note, because you might have to pay that note if you co-sign it. It's all just really practical advice this guy's given here, you know. Do not go to law against a judge, for the decision will favor him because of his standing. Do not travel on the road with a foolhardy fellow, lest he be burdensome to you. For he will act as he pleases, and through his folly you will perish with him. And that was particularly good advice back in those days, because they had the highway robbers that would, you know, attack you when you're going down the road. That would steal from you and everything else, or sometimes kill you. And we had a perfect example of that in the gospel with the Good Samaritan. You know, some robber took care of this guy, and a Good Samaritan had to help him out. And so that's exactly what they're talking about here. And that's why they called them highwaymen, because they would stand on the side of the highway and wait for you to come by and then rush out and do bad things to you. It says, do not fight with a... And so he said, he's saying here, do not travel with a foolhardy fellow, because he's not paying attention. He doesn't protect himself or anything else, you know. So don't follow somebody like that. Be wise in what you do. Do not fight with a wrathful man. Do not cross the wilderness with him, because blood is as nothing in his sight, and where no help is at hand, he will strike you down. Do not consult with a fool. Now, that's really good advice for all of us. Yeah. Don't ask a fool for advice on what to do. He'll tell you to put all your money into Bitcoin or something, you know. Do not consult with a fool, for he will not be able to keep a secret. In the presence of a stranger, do nothing that is to be kept secret, for you do not know what he will divulge. Do not reveal your thoughts to everyone, lest you drive away your good luck. In other words, keep your mouth shut about things that are nobody else's business.
Yeah.
Okay? And then we get into chapter 9, chastity and family life. So he was talking about things in general before. Now he's talking about, you know, within your own family and that kind of thing. It says, do not be jealous of the wife of your bosom, and do not teach her an evil lesson to your own hurt. Do not give yourself to a woman so that she gains mastery over your strength. Maybe he was thinking about Samson there.
Oh, yeah.
Remember how Delilah gained a mastery over his strength because he gave his secret to her?
Maybe
that's the kind of thing he's talking about here. But, you know, he's going to tell you, if you get a good woman, you know, be very thankful for that, and then treat her well, treat her like a partner, and so on like that. Do not go to meet a loose woman, lest you fall into her snares. do not associate with a woman singer, lest you be caught in her intrigues. Now, back then and for a long time, women in show business were not considered the top of society, you know. But even around the time of Shakespeare and all, the Shakespearean actress and all were not exactly what some of the Hollywood people are like today. You know, they were not exactly top of the social heap there. And so that's what he's talking about here. Do not look intently at a virgin, lest you stumble and incur penalties for her. And what does Jesus say? Do not lust. Do not look at a woman with lust, because you've already committed adultery with her in your heart. Do not give yourself to harlots, lest you lose your inheritance. I'm not sure what that means, and I didn't have any good notes on that. I'm not sure why giving yourself to a harlot means you lose your inheritance. Anybody have any thoughts on that? Say again?
The prodigal son.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Excellent. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
That was good. The prodigal son, right. Very good. Thank you. Do not look around in the streets of a city, nor wander about in its deserted sections. That's just dangerous.
Yeah. Right.
Turn away your eyes from a shapely woman, and do not look intently at beauty belonging to another. Nothing wrong with appreciating beauty. It's why you look at them and what your intentions are that the important thing. And if she belongs to somebody else, don't even think about it. Leave her alone. Many have been misled by a woman's beauty, and by its passion is kindled like a fire. Of course, we had Samson, you know, falling for Delilah, and all the rest of the people. You know, David falling for Bathsheba.
Judith? Was Judith the one?
Judith was the good one.
She was good.
Yeah. Gerald, you said something?
Johnny Depp,
yeah.
Yeah. I have to turn on my light, my mic, and laugh with that one.
Yeah.
23-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. Never dine with another man's wife, nor revel with her at wine. Not unless he's also there and you're having a dinner or something, but that's not what he's talking about here. Lest your heart turn aside to her, and in blood you be plunged into destruction. Because her husband might not like that very much. He might get bad at you. Then he has a section here starting in verse 10 called Quick Care and Caution in Relationships. Forsake not an old friend, for a new one does not compare with him. A new friend is like new wine. When it has aged, you will drink it with pleasure. But they have to prove themselves that they really are a friend. You know, that not just a fair weather friend. Do not envy the honors of a sinner, for you do not know what his end will be. Do not delight in what pleases the ungodly. Remember that they will not be held guiltless as long as they live. Keep far from a man who has the power to kill, and you will not be worried by the fear of death. But if you approach him, make no misstep, lest he rob you of your life. Know that you are walking in the midst of snares, and that you are going about on the city battlements. In other words, know where you are. You know what your surroundings are, who's around you, what their intentions might be, and that kind of thing. As much as you can, aim to know your neighbors and consult with the wise. Let your conversation be with men of understanding, and let all your discussion be about the law of the Most High. Let righteous men be your dinner companions, and let your glorying be in the fear of the Lord. Then he's got a short section here on good government. It starts with verse 9:17 and goes through verse 5 of chapter 10. That's on good government. A work will be praised for the skill of the craftsman, so a people's leader is proved wise by his words. A babbler is feared in his city, and the man who is reckless in speech will be hated. And you figure that out by just listening to what they say, you know?
Yeah.
So you listen to one kind of person, you listen to Joe Biden, and you get a whole different impression, you know. I shouldn't say that. Sorry. Sorry, God. Stop me in the face.
We can think it, though.
Yeah. So we get into chapter 10 here. A wise magistrate will educate his people, and the rule of an understanding man will be well ordered. Like the magistrate of the people, so are his officials. And like the ruler of a city, so are all its inhabitants. And that's because a lot of people try to imitate their leaders. Mm. So if you're the ruler of a city, people are going to be imitating you. So be a good leader. An undisciplined king will ruin his people, but a city will grow through the understanding of its rulers. The government of the earth is in the hands of the Lord, and over it he will raise up the right man for the time. This is the success of a man is in the hands of the Lord, and he confers his honor upon the person of the scribe. So that those things, those last four or five verses there, just go right hand in hand.
Yeah.
Okay? The governor of the earth is in the hands of the Lord. Over it, he's going to raise up the right man for the right time. Then the success of the man is in the hands of the Lord. So when he raises the man up, he's going to govern that person and make sure he's successful, just like King David.
Right. Yeah, right. When the Jews obeyed God, he sent them the right leaders and everything was fine.
Exactly.
They were victors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Then continuing, the next session beginning with verse 6 is titled Pride. It says, do not be angry with your neighbor for any injury. Do not attempt anything by acts of insolence. Jesus talked about that. The sermon, do not be angry because you go to judgment. Arrogance is hateful before the Lord and before men. And injustice is outrageous to both. Nobody has any right to be arrogant. Anything you've got that you think is so wonderful that you could be arrogant about is something that God gave you in the first place. So don't be sitting there, thinking that you're so great and get arrogant toward other people because you're so wonderful and so beautiful or so rich or anything else, that doesn't work. A good way to think about that is just to read the Magnificat in the Gospel of Luke. That the Blessed Mother gave us. She's the perfect example of humility. And she's never arrogant. Think how powerful she is right now. And even though she is, when she appears to the children and stuff, she's never arrogant.
Yeah.
She never says, you got to do what I say. Her tone of voice is always, very gentle. Sovereignty passes from nation to nation on account of injustice and insolence and wealth. So one nation overtakes another nation and makes them a slave. We had a reading at Mass today was about the Assyrians taking over Israel. And they had the diaspora. All that was left was the tribe of Judah. Yeah. So sovereignty passes from nation to nation because of injustice and insolence and wealth. How can he who is dust and ashes be proud? For even in life, his bowels decay. I guess people had a lot of bowel disease back then, Even in life, your bowels decay. A long illness baffles the physician because he can't figure out what to do about it. The king of today will die tomorrow. For when a man is dead, he will inherit creeping things and wild beasts and worms. The beginning of man's pride is to depart from the Lord. His heart has forsaken his master. The beginning of pride is to depart from the Lord. That's how you begin to move away from him.
Yeah.
By being proud and thinking you're so wonderful and everything else. You don't have anything he didn't give you.
The sin of Adam and Eve, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's been, and that was the primary sin of Lucifer.
Yeah.
Why he was driven out of heaven. For the beginning of pride is sin. And the man who clings to it pours out abominations. Therefore, the Lord brought upon them extraordinary afflictions. and destroyed them utterly. The Lord has cast down the thrones of rulers and has seated the lowly in their place. The Lord has plucked up the roots of the nations and has planted the humble in their place. The Lord has overthrown the lands of the nations, has destroyed them to the foundations of the earth. He has removed some of them and destroyed them, and has extinguished the memory of them from the earth. Pride was not created for men, nor fierce anger for those born of women. So don't be angry, don't be prideful. Be gentle with other people, don't be angry. Then he goes into a section beginning with 19, titled Honor and Dishonor. And he asks some questions and then answers the questions. He says, what race is worthy of honor? The human race. What race is worthy of honor? Those who fear the Lord. What race is unworthy of honor? The human race. What race is unworthy of honor? Those who transgress the commandments. Among brothers, their leader is worthy of honor, and those who fear the Lord are worthy of honor in his eyes. And that's verse 20. Then it goes right to verse 22. And a note at the bottom of the page here says that other authorities add a verse 21. And that verse 21 is, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of acceptance. Obduracy and pride are the beginning of rejection. And that's acceptance and rejection by God, of course. And then it goes to verse 22. It says, the rich and the eminent and the poor, their glory is in the fear of the Lord. So he lumps all those together. He lumps them all together. The rich, the eminent, and the poor. They can all receive glory from God. But their glory is in the fear of the Lord. So they're all in an eminent position before God. The rich, the eminent, and the poor. As long as they fear God. And let that fear of God rule their lives. So it is not right to despise an intelligent poor man, nor is it proper to honor a sinful man. So if you have an intelligent poor man, pay attention to what he says. You know, just because he's poor doesn't mean he's stupid. You know? The nobleman and the judge and the ruler will be honored, but none of them is greater than the man who fears the Lord. And, you know, Jesus kind of talked about that a little bit in a different sense when he talked about John the Baptist.
Oh, yeah.
When he said, no man, now, John just walked around the desert eating locusts and honey and wearing camel's, you know, coat and stuff like this shouting at the rulers for living with his brother, sister, and all that kind of stuff like this, you know. But Jesus said, no man born of woman is greater than John the Baptist. Which is interesting. And then he said, even the least in the kingdom is greater than John the Baptist.
Yeah.
So to give you some sense of what we have in store for us if we fear the Lord and make it into heaven. Have you ever heard of Anna Marie Tagi?
Yes, I don't know much about it. I've heard the name.
Yeah, she was a mystic.
Okay.
And she's incorrupt.
Okay.
Her body is incorrupt.
Yeah.
And she made an interesting statement once that, you know, of all some group of people, most of them are going to go to hell. Two or three are going to go to heaven, and the rest are going to go to purgatory, which is the vast majority are going to go to hell. And that was a very, very, something I didn't want to hear.
Yeah.
I didn't want to listen to that because I would hope that more people are trying to get to heaven, you know? But according to her, people don't try to get to heaven. They live a very self-centered life, do whatever they want, don't give any attention to God whatsoever.
Yeah.
And that's what happens to them. You know, when they go before God in judgment, he says, I don't know you.
Yeah.
And that's sad. That's That's not right. You know, people shouldn't do that. So free men will be at the service of a wise servant. And a man of understanding will not grumble. That's a really interesting thing, given the times when people had slaves and all this kind of stuff. It says, free men will be at the service of a wise servant. So they recognize his wisdom and they're paying attention to him. And so they're following his advice, you know, even though he's a servant. Do not make a display of your wisdom when you do your work, nor glorify yourself at a time when you are in want. Better is a man who works and has an abundance of everything than one who goes about boasting but lacks bread. Whereas don't be patting yourself on the back all the time. My son, glorify yourself with humility and ascribe to yourself honor according to your worth. Whereas know yourself, be truthful to yourself. What did Shakespeare said? Do your own self be true. You know, Teresa of Avila said the same thing. They always say, know yourself. You know yourself. Who will justify the man that sins against himself? And who will honor the man that dishonors his own life? A poor man is honored for his knowledge, while a rich man is honored for his wealth. A man honored in poverty, how much more in wealth? And a man dishonored in wealth, how much more in poverty? Then he goes on to chapter 11. It says, the wisdom of a humble man will lift up his head and will seat him among the great. What's the perfect example of that? The wisdom of a humble man will lift up his head and will seat him among the great. The bigger Lazarus.
Yeah.
Very humble man. Fear of the Lord. He was wise. You know, he knew enough to always fear the Lord. And he ended up in the bosom of Abraham. And the rich man that he lived at the door of, you know, would end up in hell. Do not praise a man for his good looks, nor loathe a man because of his appearance. Nobody in Hollywood wants to read that. The bee is small among flying creatures, but our product is the best of sweet things. Do not boast about wearing fine clothes, nor exalt yourself in the day that you are honored. For the works of the Lord are wonderful, and his works are concealed from men. Many kings have had to sit on the ground, but one who was never thought of has worn a crown, the crown of glory in heaven. Many rulers have been greatly disgraced, and illustrious men have been handed over to others. Then he has a section on deliberation and reflection. It says, do not find fault before you investigate. Would you investigate to find the answers? You don't come up with a conclusion, then try to do an investigation to support the conclusion.
Like the hearings?
The January 6th hearings, First consider, then reprove. You investigate, you consider, and then you reprove if where it's warranted. Do not answer before you have heard, nor interrupt a speaker in the midst of his words. Boy, you watch television sometimes, and you see these journalists, they ask somebody a question, and before they can even finish the answer, they interrupt them. Yeah. Right away, there's one guy in particular that is just notorious for that.
They say, sorry for, we don't want to interrupt, and then they go on.
Some of them don't even say that, you know. You start an answer, and they just jump right in and over, you know. It's very rude, very rude. Do not interrupt a speaker in the midst of his words. Do not argue about a matter which does not concern you, nor sit with sinners when they judge a case. And that when I read that, the first thing that came to my mind was Jesus and the woman caught in adultery. You know, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. Do not sit with sinners when they judge a case. Then he says, "My son, do not busy yourself with many matters. If you multiply activities, you will not go unpunished. Would you take on too much and you don't accomplish anything? If you pursue, you will not overtake. By fleeing, you will not escape." And I think one of the lessons that come out of that saying is that every day we need to leave time for prayer, and then make prayer that priority. Fulton Sheen said that he started every day with a holy hour of adoration.
Yeah.
And Mother Teresa had her nuns do the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's the first thing you do, is do that. You know, so begin your day with prayer. So don't busy yourself so much you forget about God and don't have time to do anything. Then you don't have time to do all the things you are trying to busy yourself with. And then beginning in verse 11, it's a section called True Riches. "There is a man who works and toils and presses on, but is so much the more in want. There is another who is slow and needs help, who lacks strength and abounds in poverty. But the eyes of the Lord look upon him for his good. He lifts him out of his low estate and raises up his head, so that many are amazed at him." So he's giving, his title is True Riches, and said, what are your true riches?
Isn't there a saying, where your treasure is, your heart is?
Yeah. Jesus said that.
Yeah.
He said, store treasure in heaven, not on earth.
Yeah.
He said, because where your heart is, that's where your treasure is.
Yeah.
Or where your treasure is, that's what your heart is.
And we were reading John of the Cross yesterday, some of the letters he wrote. And he said, if you become so attached to temporal things, like that takes over your life. And you become like in union with that treasure. And he says, whereas if God is your treasure, that leads to union with Jesus.
Well, you always have that treasure.
Yeah.
If you store up treasure on earth, it's not going with you when you die.
Yeah.
You know, there's no U-Haul trailer behind your coffin full of your treasure, you know.
Yeah.
It's, and there's a lot to be said for that, you know.
Yeah.
So the treasures that Jesus tells you to store up are those you will always have.
Yeah, and he said, when you become attached to that treasure, it takes over your life.
It does.
You become possessed by the treasure, and you can see it.
Yeah. Well, look at some of the richest men in the world. You know, that's all they think about is making money.
Yeah.
And somebody asked Bill Gates one time, why are you trying to be so, what does it mean to be so rich?
Yeah.
He said, this isn't the money, it's the power he gives you over other people.
Mm.
And that's a kind of a scary thought,
it's,
you know.
It's worse, yeah.
It says, good things and bad, life and death, poverty and wealth, all come from the Lord. The gift of the Lord endures for those who are godly, and what he approves will have lasting success. There is a man who is rich through his diligence and self-denial, and this is the reward allotted to him. When he says, I have found rest, and now I shall enjoy my goods, he does not know how much time will pass until he leaves them to others and dies. Jesus talked about that in one of the parables in the Gospels. The rich man had a lot of grain, so he had to build a new barn to put it in and all.
Yeah.
And he says, then I can eat, drink, and be merry, you know.
Yeah.
And he says, you fool, because this night your soul will be demanded of you.
Yeah.
And so that's exactly what he's talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that's in Luke chapter 12, if I'm right. He talks about the covenant. Our covenant is always with God, doing what he says. Stand by your covenant and attend to it, and grow old in your work. Rely on God and trust in God. He says, there's a note here on these verses here that start with true treasure. He says, these verses stay with the theme of the previous section. Now the message is that life and the things of the world come from God, and so does wisdom. God shows his favor to the humble, gives them strength to do good works, because, as St. Paul will say, God is at work in you both to will to will and to work for his good pleasure. People are mistaken if they think that they can get everything they want by their own efforts, for it will all be taken from them when they die. These words remind us of our Lord's teaching in the parable about the rich man. Yes, we just talked about by the rich man who put his trust in his abundance of possessions, thinking he could enjoy them for years to come. Then he was overtaken by death. So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Luke 12:21. Certainly, as the author sees things, a sinner's prosperity does not last, and the thought of death is the best antidote to pride. Only at the end of life can the proper reckoning be made. It is in regard to death that man's condition is most shrouded in doubt. In the last few verses of this section, it says, we get some idea of what the sacred writer's view of death is. He clearly warns that the Lord will reward each according to his or her conduct. Of course, Jesus says the same thing in the Gospels. And although he does not explicitly speak of a life beyond the grave, he does say that at the end of a life well lived, at the hour of death, a person will sense that he has achieved his destiny, that his life has had some meaning. He can die in peace. Right up to that point, a person can change direction and incur punishment as a result. So if you hit a good point, don't think that, well, I've made it, you know, yeah, I can coast now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got to keep always keep God before you all the time.
The devil never gives up on a soul, I guess.
He never gives up.
Yeah.
Devil never gives up, right.
Mm.
He's very obstinate that way.
Mm-hmm.
He says, do not wonder at the works of a sinner, but trust in the Lord and keep at your toil. For it is easy in the sight of the Lord to enrich a poor man quickly and suddenly. The blessing of the Lord is the reward of the godly, and quickly God causes his blessing to flourish. Do not say, what do I need, and what prosperity could be mine in the future? Do not say, I have had enough. Do not say, I have enough, and what calamity could happen to me in the future? Where it's challenging God almost.
Mm-hmm.
What calamity could happen to me? Because I've got all this wealth. In the day of prosperity, adversity is forgotten. In the day of adversity, prosperity is not remembered. For it is easy in the sight of the Lord to reward a man on the day of death according to his conduct. The misery of an hour makes one forget luxury. At the close of a man's life, his deeds will be revealed.
What will be revealed at the...
He says that the close of a man's life, his
deeds
will be revealed.
Yeah.
Call no one happy before his death. A man will be known through his children. He'll be known through his children because of the character that he's instilled in them and that they have acquired and been taught. So you look at the kids and you say, well, they must have had a good father and mother to give them this good character. Then we get to the next section here on prudence, which is starts at verse 29. Prudence in doing favors. He talked about prudence once before in chapter 8. We saw that. And now he's going to talk about prudence again in chapter 11. It says, do not bring every man into your home, for many are the wiles of the crafty. There's an example of this in the gospel. In Jewish custom, when you invited somebody into your house, you never took them into the inner part of your house. It was always a front parlor, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you'd bring them. You never brought them into your table, invited them to dinner or anything else, unless you knew them, because you didn't know what they were going to do. Never took them into your bedroom or your whatever other rooms you had. It was always in that front room. And that's it. Bartimaeus, the little guy, short little guy, climbing a tree, right? Wants to see Jesus. He's a tax collector, right? So Jesus says, Bartimaeus, come on down, for I must eat with you tonight.
Yeah.
So he's almost breaking Jewish tradition or custom there by telling Bartimaeus, I have to go into your inner house and eat dinner with you. What's the message he's saying there? Your conversion is happening. You are seeking me, so I'm going to come into your inner soul, into your house, into your dining room, and have an intimate relation with you. Mm. We're going to share a meal together. So he tells Bartimaeus, I must eat with you tonight.
Wow.
Which, you know, if you understood Jewish customs, that was a really big deal.
Right.
Because that's the first time they met. And that's something Jews didn't do. And he was a tax collector.
Yeah.
And Jesus was telling him this, you know.
Hmm.
So that was, it was like his saying, you are in the process of conversion. I'm going to complete that with you within the recesses of your home, within the recesses of your soul. You know?
Yeah.
But we still have to welcome him into the... God wants to go into our soul, but we must ask him and welcome him also.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, he never forces himself in.
Right.
But he knew Bartimaeus was seeking him. So Bartimaeus wanted him, you know. And that's a good point. He's not going to just do it because he wants to. He's going to do it because we seek him. What does he say? Seek and you will find.
I just think
knock
that.
And it shall be open to you, you know. Yeah. That kind of thing. So,
yeah.
It's like a decoy partridge in a cage, so is the mind of a proud man. It's in a cage, can't get out. For he lies in wait, turning good into evil, and to worthy actions he will attach blame. Which is what the devil does. He's always the accuser, right? From a spark of fire comes many burning coals, and a sinner lies in wait to shed blood. Beware of a scoundrel, for he devises evil, lest he give you a lasting blemish. Receive a stranger into your home, and he will upset you with commotion, and will estrange you from your family. So all this stuff that he's saying here is all the stuff that kind of was a foundation of Jewish custom. You don't bring somebody into your home unless you really know who they are and all, you know. He doesn't mention God at all in this section here, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
About prudence, of virtue.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk about God at all in this whole section here. And that's the end of chapter 11. And then we get into chapter 12. It's almost 10:30. So let's stop here and begin with chapter 12 next time. And we'll pick up with that.
Okay.
Anybody have any thoughts or questions or anything about anything we covered today?
It's all relevant to today. You can take all this.
You can take a listen.
Right?
That's right. You can apply it to a lot for today. Yeah, sure can.
Yeah.
A lot of good advice there.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff he covered today was practical advice, experiential wisdom,
right.
You might call it.
Right.
But a lot of it applies today.
Yes, you makes know, sense. And the older you get, the more you can see it.
Yeah.
So
we have a different context today. You know, the customs and everything else are different, but you can see how it would apply to some of the things we have today.
Right.
So.
Right. Thank you, Jim.
Any thoughts? Okay. See you next week.
Okay.
Have a good week, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Bye-bye.